Jennifer just commenting back there in the back. It's interesting, the songs that are cropping up again, the songs that are sung in youth ministry, like the, which one were we singing?
Alleluia.
They're getting old, and in some cases they're considered classics. Now, Pass It On was copyrighted in 1964, which means it's almost 20 years old. And yet it's the most popular song that a youth group likes to sing. You get together with any group of kids, and it seems like they always say, Pass It On, I want to sing Pass It On. When I was a teenager, we sang Pass It On, Alleluia, and God Said Yes, They'll Know We Are Christians by Our Love, and Walking and Leaping and Praising God. Those were the five songs. And those are the five songs. Still, it's kind of interesting a cycle, but some of those songs are 20 years old, which is kind of an interesting phenomenon. Anyway, to the role of vicar. A couple of thoughts came to my mind as I considered this topic. First of all, regardless of what you may think about who you are, when you are the vicar going into a parish, you are, first of all, young, regardless of the fact that you may be a 45-year-old retired colonel from the Air Force, you are still, in their eyes, a 21-year-old, long-haired teenager. And you may be prematurely balding, but that doesn't make any difference. When somebody sees that they're getting a new vicar, they think that it's at least over the years a little bit. It is understood that every vicar who goes out cares about youth, and everybody who goes out on vicarage wants to specialize in youth ministry, and every vicar who goes out comes into the parish with a tremendous repertoire of experiences and knowledge that you can share with the youth ministry, and youth ministry in that parish will be super fantastic. And regardless of the fact whether you can sing a note or not, whether you sing flat, whether you sing at all, you do play the guitar. That is understood. If you meet none of those qualifications, don't go. The reality of the situation may be something quite again. You may be an older person, and in that respect, that's really anybody over 25 years old. And increasingly, you know the statistics, increasingly the people who are graduating from the seminaries and the people who are going on vicarage are older people in second careers. And that's kind of neat, but I think it's going to take a while for local parishes to adjust to the fact that not everybody who comes to their parish as a vicar is a single 21-year-old male. You know, some of you you may be 45-year-olds, retired from some other business, and you may have grown children, you may have a wife, you probably have some gray hair, and that's kind of neat, but congregations aren't always going to be ready for what they see when you pull up with your U-Haul. And you have to be ready for that as well. Youth may not be your forte. It also may not be your first love. It also, despite the fact that you were a part of a youth group when you were at home in church during high school, you may have very, very few youth ministry experiences, especially if you are expected to carry them out in any way. And the fact of the matter is, you may have had a very unpleasant experience when you were in high school, and you may have grown to hate youth groups, and suddenly you find yourself with three of them, the junior high youth group, the senior high youth group, and the young adult youth group, and you're expected to love and facilitate and resource each one of them. So what do you do when you step into that situation? And it came to my mind as I drew upon my experience, from my experience, and maybe mine was ideal, I don't know. I really enjoyed vicarage. I loved every moment of it. I went to New Jersey. I was in, New Jersey's a wonderful place. Despite what they say, New Jersey's terrific. And I was in Westfield in a delightful congregation. The people were wonderful. The kids were great. I'll tell you about the first thing they did for me, which, I mean, it was an ideal situation, but part of it, I was just really looking forward to the experience and was not going to be intimidated by any of their expectations. And I went to learn and I went to have a good time, and I did. So what do you do when you're in that situation and it says on that little document that you'll be responsible for the youth group? Well, the first thing I would suggest, as soon as you get there and have an hour or two to talk to the pastor is to find out what he understands the congregation's expectations to be. And it may be that he has very unrealistic expectations. He may expect that youth ministry will prosper because of you, or it will die because of you. And so that may put you under a little bit of pressure, one way or the other. But you need to know where he's coming from. On the other hand, you may have a bishop who expects that you will do all of youth ministry, but he will receive all the glory. Or that even though you have received the call to be in charge of youth ministry, he wants to do it because that's his love and he enjoys that. So you really need to know where the pastor is at with regards to youth ministry. I think it's also a good idea at the first opportunity to sit down with the elders, with the Board of Education, with the youth committee, if there is a youth committee, and find out what their expectations are. If they don't have a youth group and they expect you to rebuild one from scratch, you need to know that from the very beginning. If they don't want any kind of organized youth group activity, but they would like to enhance youth ministry, you need to know that, because you don't want to come at it from different directions and end up in a lot of conflict over the subject. So you need to find out what people do expect of you. And then I think perhaps most importantly, you need to find out something about the expectations of the youth for you. And they will probably be some of those people who expect that you're going to be the longish hair guitar playing 21-year-old who come into the congregation, because that's what they've had for the last 5 years, and that's what they expect. And if you're not that, you may need to deal with that. But you need to find out where they are. We have some tools for that. There's a book called The New Start in Youth Ministry, which is probably a good resource to have in your library. There's a part of that book called Needs Assessment. We also have a Needs Assessment kit. And you simply sit down and follow the process as it's outlined in the book, and you take your kids through 5 areas to find out what their needs are, what their concerns are. You get a certain idea about what their expectations and anticipations and frustrations are with regards to the vicar. One of those frustrations will be that the vicar changes every year, and maybe there's very little continuity in the youth program. The neatest thing I can think of, and maybe you won't have this experience, but the really super thing that happened to me on vicarage, I had arrived on a Wednesday, and I was not to be introduced into the congregation until Sunday, so I felt like I had 3 or 4 days where I could be relatively innocuous and masked within the community, and nobody would necessarily know that I was there. And I was unpacking my boxes and putting the speakers in the right place on the stereo and all of those other things one Friday night. The television was on, and there was a knock at my door. Now, this is one day after I have arrived, and I went down and opened the door, and lo and behold, there were 15 kids. But, you know, and they were prepared for this. And I don't know why, I guess someone told them that I was in town, but they were prepared. They brought the refreshments. They were the entertainment, and that was the perfect opportunity to find out about them and their expectations and what it was like to live in Westfield, New Jersey, and that kind of thing. If that doesn't happen to you, then the next week you invite them to your house, and you provide the refreshments and the entertainment. But seriously, you do need to get in touch with the congregation and the people in responsible areas and the kids and find out what their expectations are for youth. If you have been given the responsibility for youth ministry in the congregation, regardless of whether that's your forte, your special interest, or regardless of the fact that you may hate teenagers, you do need to commit yourself to the ministry working with those young people. And you need to take an interest in them. It's going to be totally impossible. If that's on your document, it's going to be totally impossible to avoid them for a year. Somebody's going to find out, and then you're in trouble. So, you know, commit yourself to them, be sensitive to them, offer a listening ear. Maybe you cannot plan a youth ministry program that's dynamic and super. You can't play the guitar. You don't particularly like retreats because you don't own a sleeping bag. That's me. You know, that can be a very frustrating situation. But maybe the thing you can do is offer a listening ear. You can be the person who's always ready to sit down and share a Coke or just share 5 minutes in conversation. If somebody comes up to you, it doesn't necessarily need to be a particularly deep conversation, but simply the fact that you're there and you're willing to listen and talk and smile and laugh and blush at their dirty jokes and that, you know, that kind of thing, without being too outraged. That sort of thing, being sensitive to the young people can really get you off to the right, on the right track. In that area, you need also to be sensitive, because very often teenagers will confess to you all their criticisms about the church of which they are a member. And that can either get you into trouble with the church or with the youth, depending on what their criticisms are. Very often they'll complain about the pastor, they'll complain about the elders, they'll complain about the worship committee, they can't have youth services, the Bible classes stink. All of those kinds of things come to you. And if you're leading the Bible class, you might take that under advisement. But seriously, you do need to be sensitive to what they're saying. At the same time, you may need to, in Luther's words or somebody's words, put the best construction on everything and help them understand that even as there may be important things that do need critiquing within the congregation, it is their congregation. And maybe helping them understand that as a part of that congregation, they have a responsibility to responsibly critique, responsibly look at those things, and be a part of the solution. And if all they're doing is complaining about the pastor, but never talking to the pastor, with the pastor, that's a part of the problem. And that's true of adults as well as youth. I know all kinds of adults, some of whom I am related to, who do nothing but complain about the pastor, but they don't ever talk with the pastor. So you know, that's maybe a part of the youth ministry. When somebody comes up with a criticism or something that they really feel bad about, maybe one of your jobs will be to help facilitate the critiquing to take place in a creative experience where the congregation can grow and the ministry of the church can grow. Another point, I think, and this takes some risk, but I think you have to be honest and frank about your strengths and your weaknesses. And there's nothing wrong with saying that I am good at Bible study, but I can't play the guitar. There's absolutely nothing wrong with saying that, so that people don't have the expectation of you that you will play the guitar regardless. Maybe if they heard you once, they wouldn't have that expectation. If you don't have a lot of experience in youth ministry, I think it's fair to the bishop, especially your supervisor, to let him know that this is a learning experience for you and that you're going to give it your best try, your best shot, but it is learning. You are finding out new things all the time, and so you can't expect that the Board for Youth Services staff is running his youth ministry program, and that's okay. You might need to confess some areas in which you're weak and also flatter him by suggesting that he might be able to help you grow in those areas. Supervisors always like to know that kind of thing, where they can help you. Another point, identify people who can help you. And that is very important for a couple of reasons. One thing, you can very seldom do everything yourself. For another thing, as a vicar that changes every year, somebody's got to add some continuity from one year to the next. And that is, those persons are people who live in that community, who go to that church every Sunday, who go to that church year after year. So you need to identify people who can help you and who also then can help the youth ministry program in providing that continuity. One of the things that I found out from experience is that, well, we say a lot about asking people to help you, going out and looking for talent and abilities. But we always kind of second-guess the people that we're going to ask. And somebody says, well, you know, Mrs. Smith over there, she might be pretty good. At least she could drive the kids over to the movie when they go out next Sunday night. And you say, yeah, but, and then somebody else says, but, you know, she's busy with her preschoolers and she drives every day, and she probably wouldn't want to drive anyway, and so you decide that you won't trouble her. We do that with older age people. Somebody has some expertise, like the lady who baked the cherry pies. And I could say, gee, these two would match perfectly. It'd be a great ministry to put that old lady and that young lady together and learn how to make cherry pies. And then the other side of me could say, yeah, but she's 74 years old and probably wouldn't want to do it. And she's kind of tired and she hasn't been well, and so we just won't ask her. I think you owe it to everybody to at least ask the question, can you help, will you help, will you lend your time? The least they can do is say no, okay? And that's a positive statement, because you have given them at least the opportunity to say something. But if you don't ask them, nobody has taken any opportunities to expand ministry or to look for possibilities, look for growth. Another point, put yourself in touch with Yes.
Okay, since it looks like we're going to do what, how about the problem or a situation where you have asked someone and yeah, they're agreed to do it and everything, and they kind of get their feet into the thing, and you have realized, oh, they aren't really so good at this. And you don't, you know, how do you go about helping do that problem?
Tactfully.
But it is something not just to put on.
No, I think, yes, you do have to, you have to be honest. First of all, you have to be honest with yourself. And if it's not working out, if you've asked them to be a Bible class teacher because you thought they'd be a great Bible class teacher, and they can't do it, literally they can't do it. First of all, you have to be honest with yourself and admit that you failed first, or you messed up first, you picked the wrong person. Then you need to ask, you need to be honest with them and tell them it's not working out. But I think rather than crushing them completely or insulting them, it might be better to offer alternative service. Maybe they can't lead the Bible study, but they might be able to provide transportation for a youth activity, or they might have expertise in something. They might be willing to supervise the kids on a work project. So you offer some other alternative service, and it's, you know, it's possible, probable as well. If they're failing in something that you've asked them to do, they probably know it, and they may just be too polite to ask if they can be relieved of that responsibility. Lester wants to say something.
About that too, is never ask somebody to do anything long term initially. You might ask them for one or two short term kind of experiences. Give it a chance to feel out how they do, and if they don't work out, they've taken care of their responsibilities in your office.
Yeah, don't ask them to lead the Bible study for the next 5 years, but maybe for the next 5 weeks. And, you know, you give them a specified amount of time, which, by the way, is a key, I think, for all of youth ministry. Not to think in terms of 5 years down the road, but maybe think in terms of 3 months down the road. Sometimes, you know, kids, well, any boy during a football season who plays football, probably is not going to be a very active member of the youth group, but he doesn't play basketball, so in the middle, he can be an active part. But he does play baseball, so don't look for him in the spring. And so you might do well to think in terms of how sports activities run, or, you know, that kind of thing, or how the school year is running. In the spring, watch out for band concerts, band tours, band contests, choir contests, and all of those kinds of things. Just, you know, being aware of them, knowing where your kids are. The hand over here.
Just a principle from this
that
the lateral promotion is
important.
And you got somebody in a position that's just not functioning that day, they don't appear to ever be functioning, promote them to a different position.
The Peter principle, rising to the level of incompetence.
Right, and I don't think that's being deceptive to that person either. It's, you know, lateral this way promotion. And you don't have to tell them whether you're in a fantastic position, but just a different position.
You want to rotate the ministry. Speaking of the sports programs, by the way, and school, and one of the things you're going to hear or you're going to say next year is, our kids don't have time for church activities. And there's so much competing with us. One thing that I have developed philosophically is that churches should never compete with anybody. It's only when we compete that we get frustrated. It is only when I'm trying to cross-program with football games and band concerts and choir tours that I get frustrated. But if my kids know that the first Sunday of every month is Bible study night at the church and social hour, and the third Sunday every month is an activity, and that I'm always available to talk to them, to listen to them, but that I'm there to help them, and there's some regularity and continuity in the program, they will begin to see that as valuable. It is only where you are trying to match everybody's schedule, and you are suggesting that there's no inherent value in your program, that it cannot be set in concrete, that you begin to compete, and then you begin to be frustrated. So, you know, just as a throwaway, try not to compete, and that's both with adults and kids. Adults can tell you they got all kinds of activities too, But if the Board of Elders always meets the first Monday of the month, the Board of Elders see that, you see that as valuable. But if you're always checking calendars and saying, well, I can make it on the 16th, can you? Well, I can make it at 8 o'clock, but not at 7:30. That says something to them about the value of what they're engaged in.
Just a little experience of helping my daughter, and you know it, you try to get her babysitter sometime on Thursday night. And Thursday night, she has made a decision that choir is more important than any class, even though she is money hungry. but that is a value that has somehow been inculcated on her that she gets on other things.
Mm-hmm.
And that same situation happened on Sunday too. Worship service is very simple.
The only thing is, she did babysit for us last Thursday night. But she said that. She said that. You know, she gave up choir practice to come over to our house, which our kids are worth it. But seriously, it is, as you put value on activity, that the young people will see those activities as valuable. And if you're willing to wishy-wash them all over the calendar, what good is it?
Maybe you'll get into this a little later, but... If your job description tells you that you are the head of the youth program, okay, and you make the best of it, and you want to really be in touch with the kids, okay, but deep down in your heart, you know that continuity is suffering, and kids that age do need some continuity. Shouldn't it be your responsibility as a vicar to strongly suggest to the pastor or the other members of the congregation, say something like, well, I want to work with them, and I will, but I think we can get more continuity, or we can be a better service if someone else from the congregation would head it up, and then your vicar would more or less act like an administrative type person, or he would plug in some other way.
I agree with you exactly, and I think the key to there is that you explore with your congregation the possibility, if it doesn't exist, of establishing a youth committee or a youth board that is responsible for maintaining the youth program year-round, regardless of who happens to be responsible. It's the youth committee that is responsible for the delineating activities of the vicar. It is the youth committee that's responsible for the whole youth ministry program. It's the youth committee that solicits adult counselors and that kind of thing. And if a parish doesn't have a youth committee, I think it's something that's worth pursuing. And establishing, and not just as a part of the Board of Education, which a lot of congregations still have, but a specific board that's responsible for it. Continuity is a big thing, and it can be a very big frustration, especially about the 1st of August, when you have to put all the loose ends together, and when you're packing the things in the boxes, and you remember the things you didn't get done, and the things you think should be done, but nobody's going to carry them through, and next year's vicar's better looking, you know, and all of that kind of stuff.
You're just talking about wrapping up loose ends. The youth board, youth committee, should be the place where a general kind of goal is set up. What would be some good goals? And maybe you'll be getting to this. Some good goals. In a general and even maybe more specific terms, that you would want to say, well, the youth group will do this over this next year, and what kind of spiritual or activity-like goals are valid?
Well, that's a whole workshop in itself. That's the third point down here. Let me finish the what to do's first, and then we'll get down. Item, I don't know whether we're on 4 or 5, must be 5. Put yourself in touch with resources. Don't feel like you have to do it out there all alone. And there are a lot of resources available, both within Lutheran circles and outside of Lutheran circles. Some of the best, though, and maybe this is a prejudicial statement, but I think among youth ministry, the Board for Youth Services of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is, you know, A number one, triple A rating or whatever. LYF is a resource for you to use as you work with a youth group, and it's a good one, he says modestly, but it is, and it's there to serve you and to help you, and put yourself in touch with it. If your group is not enrolled, enroll them. Resources for Youth Ministry, which you will be receiving some copies of, is a good resource to plan youth activities and youth programs all the way from a full youth night in a congregation through a retreat, worship experiences, and the like. The Board for Youth Services has all kinds of other materials, which Les will get into this afternoon, Next August, 13 to 17, is the 1983 Youth Gathering in San Antonio, Texas. Bring your kids to it. That might be your goal for next year, is planning and programming to go to that gathering. And that could be a year event. And then also put yourself in touch with your district youth board and youth and education executive. District sponsor workshops for youth ministry, that probably would be a good idea for you to put yourself in touch with. Find out what's happening in the district. Districts have gatherings, workshops, events, resources, materials, newsletters, and the like. Maybe the second week that you're at your vicarage congregation, call up the district office and find out what they have to offer you. Some districts have extensive film libraries. Some of them have media books and periodicals that are available for your use. And you need to know about those things. And then the last point that I have, and it's probably really the first point that I have, but that is you need to take God through the whole process. And my point is to pray. And, ask for his help, ask for his guidance. Don't be shy about it. Confess your weaknesses. Celebrate your strengths. And he will help and guide you. There are an awful lot of well-meaning youth counselors, and I said this in the junior high workshop, but there are an awful lot of well-meaning youth counselors who downplay anything spiritual, never mention the name of Christ. They want to be the best friend of everybody's teenager, and they're afraid that if they say anything religious too often, the kids will think them old-fashioned, stodgy, and not worth their time and effort. But you need to be upfront about what you believe. You need to be upfront about your faith. And the only way you can do that, I think, is by the power of God's Spirit infusing you and building you up and encouraging you, even when the times are rough, even when the youth group throws you in a swimming pool or whatever. And everybody can look forward to that, I think. Then a few more things. Set a few major goals. And I really can't answer you on what are good goals, because I think you need to find out where your kids are, what the needs of the congregation are. Find out what kinds of do a needs assessment process. It may be that you want to build up to the 1983 youth gathering, but there are going to be some things that have to have happened. The kids are completely disjointed. They come from six high schools. I'm almost done, Liz. Come from six high schools, and you need to build community. That's a goal to get to the gathering. They're not very spiritual, so a goal is devotions and spiritual life. They need some money, and so a goal is to raise funds. Outline a year's program. Sit down with your elders and your youth and look at the year, look at the time you have, and see what kinds of activities you can plug in. Don't try to do everything. Limit yourself a little bit so you can be successful at one thing rather than fail at five. And then my last point is meet me in San Antonio next August and tell me how you did. And we'll compare notes and see how it works out. I go planning on having a good experience, though, and I'm sure you will. God will bless your efforts, and it'll be a great year. Now, my watch says 1:32. So, any questions?
Didn't have a handout. You were supposed to take notes or buy the tape.
Okay, just to do a quick shot on where each individual session will be. Role of the vicar's wife. Lori Weitzman here? She was in the hall. Okay, Lori will be in 202 over there. Okay, youth worship, 206. Discipling youth, 204. And how to get and keep youth ministry going. 201, right here, Arlo Otto, right there, DCE at Ascension, here in St. Louis, will lead that. And Arlo did that sectional last year, so he's got a down pat. Any questions? Quick word, when you come back into this room after the last session, start at this end with a bag from Concordia Publishing House, and pick up one of everything down the line, every color, okay, and a button from LYF, and right on down the line, make sure you get one of everything, and then we'll talk about some of those resources, plus some extras that aren't there when we get ready to do the resource section, okay? Half hour, 5 minutes to get to your...